All right, good morning. I'm glad we had that little moment to replace the batteries because I was hoping Alan's going to show up. So I had put a challenge out last Sunday that we're going through the genealogies. And you remember when we were talking about the genealogies in your Bible reading, that genealogies are where Bible readings die, right? They're like, oh, we're going to get to the genealogies. And like, I'm skipping this. And I never pick the Bible up again. And that's where they go to die. So the genealogies in Genesis chapter 10 and 11, what we're going to go over today is going to be, might be rough. Like, oof, you know, and you're going to hear a lot of butchered names. And so just in your mind, translate it to how it should be said, if you think it's read that way. But so we'll go through that. So when I had made that comment, hey, well, I'll take volunteers if anybody wants to read it. Alan came up to me and says, hey, I'll read them. I thought, okay, but I see what his plan is. So so he must be out of town or something. So anyway, we'll try to go through and do the best I can to read those this morning if he shows up, and I'm going to call him out. But so we're going to start off in chapter 10. And before we do, let's do a quick review. When we had talked about, we're going to come up on the end, hopefully, of chapter 11 this morning, and that'll be the end of the quarter. But it's kind of a unique place is where we're going to stop, because where we had broken Genesis up was in Genesis 1 through 11, and then 11, and then 12 through 50, broken up into the two major parts of Genesis. And 1 through 11 dealt with four major events. Does anybody recall what those are? Yep. Yep. The flood. Okay. There were three of them in particular. They all started with C's. We tried to make them easy to remember. If you remember, there was creation, corruption. I know we haven't done it. I intended to do these more frequently, and I didn't. There was creation, there was corruption, there was correction, and then there was confusion. There's creation, which is self-explanatory. There was corruption, which was sin. There was correction, which was the flood. And there was confusion, which is the Tower of Babel, which we'll hit today. So I had read that somewhere, like, oh, the three C's. You know, whenever I'm in school, like, I got to memorize this kind of stuff. I got to memorize it. So I come up with some silly pattern that's more complicated than actually memorizing what I'm supposed to memorize. But that's what I do. So, and I read that with the three C's. I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. But every time I do it, oh, four C's. Yeah. Okay, it's four C's. Thank you. It seems easy, right? But I always have to sit there, what are they again? So those are that's 1 through 11. Are those four events, or those four C's. Then in 12 through 50, we have four great men. And who are they? This will be a little bit easier. Abraham. Joseph, right. And Joseph's not a lot of times compared with, oh, well, he's not a patriarch, right? But his story takes up 12 or 13 chapters of Genesis. It's a big part of whether you're going to categorize him as a patriarch or not. He's a big part of Genesis, so that's why I was counting this. And again, I'm trying to break this up into fun parts. There's four great events, and there's four great men that make up Genesis 1 through 11, and then 12 through 50. So just a refresh there. You won't get quiz next week because I won't be here next week. Well, that reminds me, though. We're starting Acts next week. So I think Nolan and Chris, do I have that combo right? It's a tag team event. Of Nolan and Chris for the next quarter for doing Acts. So be prepared for that. And I meant to look on the back of what Wednesday is going to be, but I think Matt is teaching class on Wednesday. It's Esther? Thank you. All right, somebody's doing my work for me. I appreciate that. So it's Esther on Wednesday. So if you want to plan ahead and be prepared for those classes coming up on those days. All right. Starting in chapter 10, before we begin, I'd ask Johnny Melton, since you're right behind each other, you both looked up at the same time, to lead us in prayer before we begin. Thank you.
Traveling, and please help us all to always
Thank you. All right, so Genesis chapter 10. We're going to see these genealogies are written in a very similar rhythm as other genealogies, right? So-and-so begot so-and-so and lived X amount of years, and it's this pattern that you see through all the genealogies. But you don't see begot. It's written a little bit differently. It's dependent on your translation that these were the sons of so-and-so. These were the sons of this and that. And it really doesn't give you the years. We're going to see in chapter 11 where more years are given, more detail about people's lives. And we're going to notice something, and you may have picked it up already if you've read chapter 11, the change in how long people live, right? Things are changing, especially after the flood, after the Tower of Babel, these big events that happen. Things are changing in the world that God's created. So you're starting to see this rhythm that's a little bit different. Also, the purpose of this chapter is to trace back various people's groups, tribes, back to their origin. I think we mentioned this sometime last week, the ancestry.com or whatever that is, that, you know, people are interested. Where did I come from? How did I get, like, why am I who I am? Where did I come from? And that's exactly what Genesis is written for. Where did you come from? What? I'm in this tribe. I'm from this people. I live in this land. How did I get here? Well, this is how you got here. And again, being mindful of who Genesis is written for. You know, it's written for the Israelites when they've come out of Canaan. This is kind of how we got here. It's a backstory for Israel. It's interesting that chapter 10 tells us what happened, and chapter 11 tells us how it happened, right? So in 10, this is what happened, but how did all this stuff happen? How did you get all these different people? And that's what chapter 11 is going to explain for us. So sometimes you read a story and then the result, but you see the result in chapter 10 and then how it happened in chapter 11. It's kind of backwards. But chapter 11 is going to shine some light on things that we're going to read in chapter 10. So in chapter 10, verses 1 through 5, we see the sons of Japheth. And Japheth is a son of who? Noah, right. So Noah had the three sons. We think there were probably just those three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And this is the sons of Japheth in 1 through 5. Now these are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah. The sons were born to them after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer and Magog, Madai and Javan, Tubal, Mesha, and Tyrus. The sons of Gomer were Ashkin, Ribka, Toman. And the sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. And these are the coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to their nation, and everyone according to their families into their nations. So you see some familiar names here, and that's what's interesting when you go through the genealogy. It's like, wait a second, isn't there a city named? Wait a second, isn't there a region named? Wait a second, isn't there some sort of event? You're like, that's where they came from. And you think about that when you read, when you're reading through certain genealogies and you find this guy, Lafayette, and you find out that, you know, that's what the city of Fayetteville was named after. Like, oh, it's French. You know, and you start to be like, oh, that exposes a little bit of history about where we came from, how we got here, were they just going through book and thought, Fayette County sounds kind of neat. No, there's history behind that. And this is what this is written for. And it benefits us when we can see these different nations and where they come from. Japheth is probably the hardest one to trace back to find out what he comes from, where he comes from, and what happened to him. What nation does Japheth, we mentioned this last week, does Japheth turn into, so to speak? I don't know if it's a nation, but a group of people. Japheth's people were going to be brought under the house or the tent of Shem. The Gentiles, yes. That's what we talked about later, that the Gentiles were going to be under that later through Christ. That's the prophecy. When that wall was broken down and they brought back under the God's people, that's where Japheth, that's kind of generally where his people come from. So generally speaking, most of us in here, if not all of us, are probably sons of Japheth. You know, where we come from is being Gentiles, so to speak, and not from the Jewish nation. Of course, it's tough to trace our lineage back that far. I can't even go back to the 18-somethings, I don't think. I don't know. I've never done the ancestry.com, so maybe I can go back really far, but I don't know. I'm not super sure I really care, but Anyway, so I don't know really where I came from, but we know at least the Gentile nation comes from here. And they mostly moved to the north originally, and then after the Tower of Babel, you'll see that they moved east and west, but they scattered about. 6 through 18, we see the sons of Ham. And this turns out to be the Canaanite nation. So as you go through here, you're going to pick up a lot of names. Wait a second, those were enemies of God. And that's exactly right, because it's also the land of Canaan. And when it talks about in the prophecy to Shem that he's going to rule over you, he's going to take that land, right? God's going to give Israel that land that Canaan has. That's part of the promise to Abraham. But the sons, and I'm not going to go through and read here, but because I just butchered 1 through 5, but the sons of Ham were Cush. So you see Cush, you see Canaan, the father of Nimrod. Nimrod was famous for being a great man of power. He was a great hunter. He was a builder of cities. One particular city he was really famous for was Babel. So that was there was another city that he was well known for. Nineveh was one he's credited to building. So these are great men and great city builders of the sons of Ham. Cush, what I could find, is generally accepted as being Ethiopians who lived in the south of Egypt. That's kind of the tribe of the people he came from. The descendants of Canaan included Sidon and Heth, who the Hittites came from. Again, these names start to sound familiar, like, oh, that's where the Hittites. They were constantly a problem to God's people. But it was really comes from, you know, they were all family, so to speak, right? Because they all come from Ham's genealogy. And you think about the value of this, again, as the children of Israel, when they hear this, like, because they've already had trouble with some of these folks. They're like, oh, that's where they came from. You know, it's Uncle Bob's kids. You know, like, ah, you know, we never really got along with them anyway. And you find out that, you know, this all kind of goes back to the sons of Noah. So Sidon is firstborn, is mentioned in 15. And Heth and the Jebusite and the Amorite and the Girgashite and the Hivite. All, again, names and stuff that you hear over and over. The territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon in verse 19 as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, and you go toward Sodom and Gomorrah. There's something else I've heard, right? You hear these names popping up. So in 21, we finally have this lineage of Shem, the sons of Shem. Shem is the ancestor of Eber. And pay particular attention to Eber, because in chapter 11, it's going to be narrowed down, because one of his sons was Peleg. In chapter 11, in 10 through 26, that's going to highlight us when we get to that, highlight the importance of that particular genealogy. Because just like we talked about earlier with Shem, that's where the genealogy of Christ comes from. So these are a couple of really important characters that we're going to see in Shem's genealogy. And it's interesting you think that these enemies of this family, the Canaanites, and then the Gentiles who kind of took off and kind of disappeared, you didn't hear from again, that they were going to be brought back under the tent of Shem. And then Shem, who's the lineage of Christ is going to come through. It all came through these three boys. And you wonder, you would think that at least they would get along, right? So they have kids and then their cousins and they have second cousins or whatever stuff breaks down to. You think you get, we're all family, right? We're all from Noah. But it's really not that uncommon that you have a family of eight, so to speak. There was Noah, Miss Noah, their kids, and the wives, that they just don't get along, right? You think, well, surely they could have gotten along and understood, oh, well, we're family. Let's not fight. But we even see that in today's families, right? Now, you could have a family of two, and the kids just aren't going to get along. You know, they're not going to get along. You get a family of three, you get a family of nine. You're going to have those dynamics in families. They're just not going to get along. So it's interesting to think that it all came and all this started from just this family of eight. Nancy. Yes. Yeah. And the punishment of not being able to communicate is really what it is. Like, I'm going to straighten this. I'm going to address this because you're not doing what I'd ask you to do. And what's interesting, again, in that situation, it's God's will is going to be performed. God's will is going to happen. Are you going to be a part of it? or are you going to go against it? If God says, I want you to scatter and fulfill this nation and, you know, multiply, you're going to do it. And you say, well, I'm not going to do it. You're actually going to do it. You know, it's to see God work in that fashion is really cool. And that's what we get to right here in chapter 11. So in verse 32 of chapter 10, it kind of ties everything up in a nice little bow. These are the families of the sons of Noah according to their genealogies by their nations. Out of these nations were separated on earth after the flood. So he's created these groups. And that's what chapter 10 is about. So we kind of ran through that one relatively quickly, but I just wanted to go through that, and I didn't want to read it. If I had a volunteer to read it, they could knock themselves out. But I just want to pick out some things in there that I think were interesting. So in chapter 11, let's read verses 1 through 9. You have a volunteer to read 1 through 9? Anyone like to read that? Joanne, thank you.
And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass that they journeyed from the east, that they found plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower, whose top had reached unto heaven. Let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see a city, the city and the tower, which the children of men built. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they began to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and yet confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth.
All right. So he told them to go do that, and then we'll see in verse 9 that the Lord scattered them. Go out, multiply, populate the earth, do these things. They didn't do it. So God says, in verse 9, you see, well, God's going to do it then. God's will wins every time. What is God's desire? For them to go out and over the face of the earth. So we're starting to see in verses 1 through 9 that Joanne just read, and thanks for doing that, Joanne, that people are becoming aware of who they are, of their identity. But now they want some solidarity, right? And so you're starting to see in verse 1 through 2, as they came and they journeyed east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and then they just settled there. How is that against what God asked them to do? What were they asked to do? What were they told to do? To fill the earth, to go out and scatter. So they're like, hey, I need you to go out and spread all this, you know, if you're to go out and, you know, go into a field and put seed out into a field or what, you know, you kind of just park right here like, man, this is really nice, right? And you stop. Like, the whole field has to be done, right? And that's what they've done. They've gone out, and they see this plain, like, this is a really nice area. Let's just park it right here. And that you see that first violation of what God's asked them to do when they just settle in that plain there. They want to make a mark for themselves. And that's not that common from today. You know, you want to leave a mark for yourselves, right? You don't want to just like, who was Michael? What did he ever do? Oh, he's the one that built the XYZ. He's the one that established this. He's the one that got the patent for this, or he's developed whatever. You know, we want to leave a mark for ourselves. And that's no different than what is going on here. They wanted to leave something, a mark for themselves as well. In verse 4, it even says, let us build a city for ourselves, a tower whose top will reach into heaven, and let us make for ourselves a name, right? People are going to know who we are. It's not about God, it's about us. They want to build these things for who we are. Otherwise, we'll be scattered abroad over the whole face of the earth. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. You said that God told them to scatter?
Mm-hmm. It's back up. It's a couple chapters earlier.
9:1.
Be fruitful and multiply the earth. So this is after the covenant of the rainbow. He tells them to go out and multiply and fill the earth. and they just kind of park it right there. 9:7 also says the same thing as for you. Be fruitful, multiply, populate the earth abundantly, and multiply in it. So the instruction comes back a couple chapters earlier. I would not have found it that fast. So thanks, Nancy. I'm like, it's somewhere back, scrolling back. So then God comes down, back to chapter 11. So the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. God is involved with this, right? They think, well, God left us. But no, God is involved in all the things they have to do. He comes down and sees it. And he sees they're one people. They have the same language. And it's the beginning of what they will do in a negative way, right? He sees this as a negative thing. They're all together with the same language. This is not a good thing. What happened the last time things got bad on earth? Yeah, it was destroyed, right? Because they had that same language, that same mindset. They were all together. You had that. You didn't have these different languages and things and such as you did then. They got together, they collaborated, and the entire, all the population except for eight people, every thought was evil because they had that communication link. They had that collaboration. God, is God opposed to unity? Let me ask that question. Right. You know, because he wants the church to be unified, right? In unity, come together in unity. God loves unity. But also unity in this situation, he knows, what will they do? Let's see, in verse 6, and this is what they began to do, and now nothing which they propose will be impossible for them, right? Because they've got numbers, and they're going to collaborate, and they're going to put these things together. Nothing's impossible for them. But perhaps the wickedness of the people would have grown beyond measure. It would have just, like, because they're collaborating, doing things. So you've already seen it. They haven't been that long, I don't think, off the ark, and they've been told to scatter, and they park it there, and like, hey, I got a great idea. Let's build this tower and make a name for ourselves. Like, no, that's not what you need to do. You need to go out and do the things that I've asked you to do. So I think maybe the wickedness of the people would have grown beyond measure again had it remained one. And I'd heard this as well, and I'm not really sure. It's interesting, I'll say that. There has, I don't think, never, ever been a worldwide dominating nation, has there? I'm not a great historian. But where, did they all speak the same language? Right. So I think that's the interesting, you've never had one nation that rules the entire world, right? Because we all speak the same language, we all do the same thing, we're all, now there are regions and they've tried to convert and overtake different regions that are around them, but to say that it's interesting to go back through history. There's never been anything like that, like there was here, like this collaboration with the same language. And is that one of the benefits of having that, the multiple languages and the multiple nations, that there's never really been one global empire, one language, one society? Because what kind of trouble could you get into if you all, it's harder, right, when you have separate nations and separate language to collaborate and get things together, right? I mean, you look at countries that even on the same continent, you know, you can't get along. Like, it's different languages, there's tariffs, there's, you know, you're different than us. Like, the only thing that's different than us is that little invisible line that can disconnects us. Like, are we really that different? But it's interesting, there's never been at least a global that I can think of or that I could look up. There's never been a global empire that has one type of transaction, one type of currency, one type of language, one type of government. Yes, ma'am.
Say that's the Trinity, that's the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
Oh, let us go down?
Directing the course of man. And I just think it's cool when you see that in Genesis 1:26 and after the fall and here where they're guiding the fate of man.
Yeah, and I think that's what you talk about when you go back to, where was it? That the Lord came down to the city, the tower, which the men have built, go back up to verse 5. You see the engagement of God. You see the engagement of the Godhead. He just didn't drop us off and like, you guys figure it out. I made all this stuff and I left. God is engaged all the time. And you see this when he says, let us do this. Let us make this. That God is guiding the steps and what goes on. And we were talking about this some Sunday about taking on, you know, the burden of what's going on around there. God's got this. God has everything. When you think, oh, it can't get any worse than this. Where is God? God's here. You know, whether whoever is in political power, whatever happens in society, whatever, you can't think that God is not there. God is there. God is there when there were eight godly people and righteous people found on the entire planet. God was there. Joseph, and we did a study on Joseph many years ago, but this one always stuck with me. Whenever he was in prison, when he was sold by his brothers, when he was betrayed by Potiphar's wife, when he was, there's a fourth one, can't think of what it is. Every one of those verses, if you go back and read every one of those, it says God was with him. In the worst of the situations that Joseph was in, God was with him. Right? So God is in control of this. I don't have to worry about going back and taking something over or doing something or taking a stand for God. God is there. I always find that interesting. So yeah, in that situation that let us go down, God's engagement with all of this. So now it's time to start over. All right, okay, let's just start over. What is one way it's not going to start over? Right, there's no flood, right? We have this covenant, we have this rainbow we talked about last week. That's not going to happen. So we're going to give this a reboot. And so they confuse the languages. Let's go down and confuse your language, verse 7, so they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from over there, over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. They just... Do you find it hard to work with people that speak your same language sometimes? Like, we're not just communicating, right? Like, I can't even... They're saying something. I know they're using English language, but I don't even know what they're talking about. You know, whatever the reason may be, like, we just can't communicate. Now, these guys are building this city. They're like, hey, move that 2x4 over here and, you know, pour that concrete here and do this. And they're communicating. And it's not gradually, right? God confused your language and the city stopped. What would that have been like? You're sitting there working on scaffolding with a guy and like, hey, hand me the hammer. And the guy's like, what? What are you saying? And then he's asking what he's saying. He's like, what are you... I just wonder what that would have been like, right? Because he went down and confused the language, and it wasn't until later that they had a few people, they had translators and all this stuff, like, oh, I'll translate for you. They had no idea what was going on because the city stopped. They could not understand one another, and I wonder what that dynamic would have looked like when he went down and confused the languages, like, we can't work together anymore. So when you can't work together with people I can't work with, I kind of distance myself. Right? I can't work over there. I don't know what they're doing over there. And you distance yourselves. And this is how God is fulfilling this thing. And I'm, out of just pure curiosity, wonder what that looked like. So when you, I do not travel. I've traveled once out of the country. I like this country. I like staying here. So I'm not very adventurous. But I've heard this, when you go somewhere and you're in a nation, in a country that doesn't speak your language, and if you hear somebody that speaks English, even if it's broken English or something with an accent, you know, normally you hear, oh, they're not from here. But when you travel overseas and you hear somebody speak English, what is your reaction to that? You draw to them, right? You're like, I heard my language, or rather if it's whatever language that I'm there natively hearing, when I hear that language, I think, wow, you know, there's somebody, now they may be from Australia, you know, that's, you could say that's not English, but, you know, at least I can understand it, right? I can understand that language, and you draw towards that person. You could, but here, you're like, I don't know that person, but when you're in another country, you have that bond now of your language. And you get together because I can't understand. And that's what's going to happen here. You're starting to see these nations and these groups build together based on their language because they can't hang out, all the people that can't speak the same language hanging out together. So they start to gather. The Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth and they stopped building the city. So you start to see this breakup. It would force them to get with each other into their own nations. God's desire and instruction from chapters 8 and 9 are fulfilled, and his will be accomplished. Therefore, in closing this out, therefore its name was called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth because of their language. How does chapter 11 tell us what happened in chapter? Remember we already said earlier, chapter 11 is going to tell us how chapter 10 went down. Has anybody picked up on it? Okay. Yes. Yes. Excellent. High five. All right. Yeah, that's it. Go back and read chapter 10. You find things when you read scripture, like that is really, that's what makes reading the Bible fun. And like, reading the Bible is fun. Yes, it is fun. Not it can be. It is. Just get in it. So go back and read chapter 10. This is neat. Chapter 10. So think about this. The Israelites are here in chapter 10. They're hearing this being read. In chapter 10 and verse 5, from these coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands. What? Everyone according to their language, right? When I read 10 before I read 11, I don't pick that up. I just read it like, hey, okay, so they got, well, how did we all get different languages? Because there were an Adam and Eve. Did they have different languages? Or did Cain and Abel come up, hey, we're going to come up with a new language, you know, we're going to do Pig Latin, and we're going to have our own language, something our parents can't understand. Well, how did these languages come about? Because we all speak differently. We're in different nations. So you see in 10, they were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, according to their nations. So when they hear this, like, how did this happen? I'm going to tell you how it happened. They were trying to build this. They all got together. They saw this plane that was really cool. They tried to build this tower. And they're like, y'all ain't doing that. And I'm going to go down and confuse the language. They broke up their nations. Chapter 10 and verse 20, what does it say? These are the sons of Ham, right? So this is the next son we're talking about. We did Japheth first. Now we have the sons of Ham. These are the sons of Ham according to their families, according to their languages. And then finally in 31, these are the sons of Shem according to their families, according to their languages, by their land, according to their nations. I find that super interesting. Maybe I'm the only one, but, you know, so you wonder, how did they get there? Well, how they got there is told in chapter 11, how that happened, how they got to all these languages. Of connecting those dots. Yes, ma'am.
In verse 5 of chapter 10, he called them the Gentiles. This is my first time. They were automatically called the Gentiles, which meant Christ would not come out of there. But I don't know why him's not defining that as well in verse 2.
In chapter 5, he calls them as Gentiles?
In verse 5. Chapter 2, verse 5.
Okay, mine doesn't say Gentiles, but...
Yours doesn't say Gentiles?
No, it doesn't. Well, no, that's... I do not have the proof text for the Bible. What version are you using? Oh, old school. Okay, interesting. New King James says Gentiles as well? Oh, that's what Donna was saying. You're a New King James, and it says Gentiles as well? All right, I'm busted. I have New American Standard, so I don't have Gentiles. That's interesting.
What
So this is the New American Standard. It says, from these, the coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to their nation, according to their families, according to their nations. Is the coastland that's the Gentiles? Interesting.
What's that? In the New King James, it's all of them. From these, the coastland of the peoples. So the coastland nations in your country is also in the New King James, but it adds Gentiles.
Okay.
Well,
so Japheth, we know that we're going to be under the tent of Shem, right? So we know they are the Gentile nation. Yeah, why Ham's family is not considered, because they certainly weren't the Jewish heritage. Perhaps they were just always going to be enemies. I don't know. That's something to look up. I didn't realize that the word Gentile was used in that. In that verse, that's interesting. Anybody else want to take a stab at that one? Because I don't know. All right.
The Strong's definition has it as a foreign nation. That's what Gentile,
foreign nation. And even the Canaanites would be a foreign nation. I guess the question was, why would Gentile not be used for Ham as well? Because they'd be a foreign nation as well. Yeah, I don't know.
And coastal they had is just dry land.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. That's interesting stuff. That's the beauty about the different translations, right? One can speak into, if you stick to one, you can read into another one. I would not recommend RSV or Good News for Modern, none of the other translations, but you know, there's some good ones you can go through and kind of read between and pick some of that stuff up. All right. Skipping down to 10 through 23, this is where we notice in, I'm sorry, chapter 11, let me get to chapter 11. So we see in chapter 10, the genealogies didn't necessarily talk about any ages, but then the descendants of Shem, where you start getting into detail, is why is it we care about Shem over at Ham and Japheth? Lineage of Christ, right? So this is going to give us a little bit more detail and kind of drill down into the descendants of Shem. What is it you notice is going on in this in these verses that are different than the genealogy earlier? Yeah, how long they lived. What do you notice about that? It is. It's starting to go down, right? Instead of living 700 years, 800 years, 900 years, people are starting to, you know, only live 209 years, and only, you know, those numbers are starting to come down. In 27 through 32, now these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram. See, now we're setting up, like, where did Abram come from? The father of Abram, Nahor, Haran, and Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of in birth of the Ur of Chaldeans. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Sarah was barren and had no children. Terah took Abram and his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, the son of Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans in order to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran and settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So here we are setting up, explaining how Abraham ended up in Canaan, where they came from, right? So how did we end up in Canaan? Because we were over here before, now we're in Canaan. How did you guys end up here? Right, well, I kind of lived here, and I got a job there, and I transferred there, and I went to school here. And, you know, you kind of follow it back. Like, how did Abram, who wasn't from Canaan, end up in Canaan? Because Canaan was not really a great place. Because remember, that's where the curse was put on Canaan, who was a Ham son received the curse, but Abram lived over there. How did he get over there? Does anybody know? How did Abram end up in Canaan? Yeah, God told him to, right? I need you to pack your stuff up, and I'm going to take you to this land, and you're going to go over to this land of Canaan. God told him to do it. In 31 and 32, we see that the intended target of travel was Canaan, but they stopped in Haran and stayed there. So a lot of times you think, hey, I'm going straight to Canaan. But there were a lot of stops before they ever made it to Canaan. There were a lot of stops. And that's where we get the idea of him being this sojourner. Right? He didn't just pack his stuff up, get a U-Haul, and they went to Canaan, and they were there. There were many, many stops along the way. We see in chapter 12 what Mark talked about. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land I will show you. I will make you a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who curse you I will curse you. And in all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoke to him, and Lot went from him, and Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took Sarah his wife, and Lot his nephew, and all their possessions, and they accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed the land as far as Shechem, to the oak of Moriah. Now the Canaanite was in the land then. And the Lord appeared to Abram, to your descendants I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. So this is where we see that calling that comes out. It's interesting, and you can go back and look at this if you're super interested. At what point did Abram get called to go to Canaan? Where was he living at? Right. So there's some controversy if you go back and read Acts 7. That Acts 7 says that Abram was called to go to Canaan before he dwelt in the land of Haran. So there's confusion whether Abraham was to dwell in the Canaan or when he was told to dwell in Canaan. Because he goes somewhere else and he parks it for a while and then he goes somewhere else. And it says in Haran he was told to go to Canaan. It doesn't matter. I think there's some conflict there as to when he was told. Regardless of when he was told, he did what God said. Right? So you'll read some commentaries, you can't get it bogged down of when that happened. It really doesn't matter. The point... So if you go back to Hebrews 11, and you read about, it's interesting to read this chapter in Genesis and also read Hebrews 11 about Abraham. It makes you wonder if the Canaan that God told Abraham to go to was the Canaan, the physical Canaan, because it talks about this city that God's prepared, that God builds the foundation for, that God establishes. And that wasn't the city of Canaan or the land of Canaan, right? So really when he says, I'm going to build this, I need you to go to Canaan, what Canaan is he talking about? Now obviously he's talking about physically going to Canaan because he does go to Canaan. But there's also a reference that there's a Canaan that's not of this world, that's this foundation that God has created. Go back and read Hebrews 11 along with this chapter. It's a lot of fun to piece that together and find out, hey, he was going to the promised land. And you think it was out by the beach, it had the mountains, it had all this stuff. And that's where we get caught up, right? That our promised land is, you know, that house that we would dream house we have, and it's by the lake or it's by the whatever, right? But our home, where God calls us, is not here. It's not anywhere near here. It's not anywhere on this planet. It is a home that God has prepared for us. That's what God's calling us for, not anything that's here. And he is that continually being that sojourner that God calls him to be, because this isn't his home. There's a home that God's prepared for. Okay.
About the sojourn of Abraham, and then takes the people of Israel through a brief history of all the difficulties and hardships that they've endured, the things that seemed insurmountable that they could not overcome, but then God overcame for them. And I think he gives them hope, like, continue to serve me, you know, continue to serve God forever, and he will continue to deliver you. And I think that hope of the promised land to come in Hebrews 11 is another brief history of the trials and hardships, the faith chapter, where he talks about all the people who overcame through God, and we have the same hope.
Right.
Just like Abraham did. If we sojourn where God helped us.
Yep. And so that's why I don't want to get bogged down on that land that he was going to, that God was delivering. God delivered into a physical land, but ultimately it was to be that nation in that kingdom, that the church that God was going to set up through this lineage of Abraham to be Christ. Right? This was the ultimate, the foundation that was going to be established. All right, made it through chapter 11. We'll pick up maybe chapter 12 in 6 months, maybe. I appreciate your attention, all the good comments. Coming prepared to class has been awesome. So I appreciate y'all a ton. And we'll start with Acts next Sunday and Esther on Wednesday. Thank you.